This is Phil Huple, and you're listening to Paper Cuts.
Welcome to Paper Cuts, the podcast documenting the contemporary world of zines, small press, and arts publishing. I'm your co-host, Christopher Cardenbikas. I am joined by my co-host, Jennifer Lillis. And our guest today is Phil Huitene, the publisher and editor-in-chief of East City Arts, DC's visual arts publication. And he is also the organizer of the first Capital Art Book Fair, which is going to be held on April 1st and 2nd, 2023. Phil, welcome to Paper Cuts, and thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much for doing this, and it's really a pleasure to be here.
Yeah, and this is a fun conversation because this is part one of what will be a two-part conversation, although it will already be in one episode. So everyone listening to this will hear a bit of the before and after of the Capital Art Book Fair. And maybe just to get into this, as we are all anxiously awaiting and preparing for April 1st, can you tell us a little bit about what the Capital Art Book Fair is and where is it?
Sure. The Capital Art Book Fair is taking place at Eastern Markets North Hall, which is in the old Eastern Market building itself. So it's divided into two parts. The southern part is where the food stalls are. So they're there in perpetuity. So like the poultry market, the seafood market, the cheese guy. And then the other half of it is the North Hall, which is managed by the city. District of Columbia government, and there's a market manager who runs it. So we're renting it from the city. The Capital Art Book Fair is a production of East City Art, and the goal this year is to show small presses, independent artists, photographers, everything that you would expect from an art book fair. Part of the reason we chose this location is because, first of all, there's a lot of traffic there on a Saturday and Sunday in April. Generally speaking, on weekends, there are over 20,000 people that come through the market. There are a lot of outdoor vendors who sell everything from soap to prints to paintings to ceramics. So there is an audience that is naturally going to be in tune with the art book fair.
Yeah, I think this is a really wonderful location in DC to have something like this. As mm-hmm. you said, kind of the mix of the regular Eastern Market crowd mm-hmm. and then inserting this art book fair into it should be a really fun like combination of crowds and hopefully exposing a lot of publishers to people who wouldn't normally find them.
Exactly. And one of the things that we've also done is we've been really in contact with all the major organizations in the neighborhood. So the Capital Community Foundation, the cultural groups like Capitol Hill Arts Workshop, Hill Center. We've been in touch with Eastern Market Main Street, which is the governing nonprofit that is it's sort of like the business improvement districts in DC, but the main streets are slightly different. They have even smaller bites of the neighborhood. So there's Eastern Market Main Street and also Barracks Row Main Street and the Capitol Hill Business Improvement District that are all involved with this. And we've contacted as many different organizations in the neighborhood as well. So there's going to be a combination of the regulars who come from the whole region on a beautiful Saturday in April, and also everybody in the neighborhood on Capitol Hill is connected to this project.
Yeah, and I feel like this is such an interesting time to be having this right now. Like this is the first iteration of the Capital Art Book Fair. Mm-hmm. And I really hope that after this experience, you're still up to produce more after this. But we're also experiencing this like return to in-person art book fairs right now at this stage of the pandemic where everyone's more comfortable being around people. Mm-hmm. So it's exciting this is happening in DC. But I'm wondering about some of your thought process in organizing this year and wanting this to happen now at this moment.
So I think everything you touched upon is correct. I think that there is a big trend to everybody getting back together again. All the COVID centers in DC are closing down. So I'm hoping that that's a sign that, you know, we're either going to live with this, you know, minimally, that it's gone away. I've been planning an art book fair for many years. So my initial goal was to have this several years ago, but of course we know what happened. But I had flown to take a look at the LA Art Book Fair and the New York, and took the train up to see the New York Art Book Fair, both of which are run by Printed Matter. I went to the Independent Art Book Fair in Brooklyn, and then I checked out a couple up in New England as well. So I really did a lot of research to see what these art book fairs were all about as an independent publisher myself, being interested in the process. And I completely took to it as an audience member. I really loved seeing the whole variety of works that are exhibited, all the different items that are for sale, everything from records to t-shirts to prints, and of course, books. What I particularly liked about what I saw in both LA and in New York was the size of the art book fairs allowed for a whole range of different exhibitors, everything from people who were doing small zines by photocopying to antiquarians who were selling very expensive editions of different kinds of books or zines or prints. And I just found that absolutely fascinating, the whole mix of everything. So even though there was a lot of range rather, with what was being shown, it somehow all fit together nicely. So it's like all these crazy bits and pieces, but somehow there's this whole to it. So I thought that it would be wonderful to bring something similar to Washington. One of the big challenges was finding a large space, but that's probably a different conversation. But I think Eastern Market for the first one is ideal. We can show a good number of vendors and exhibitors for the first Capital Art Book Fair. And then, you know, maybe next year we can expand both within the hall, and then maybe in future years, try to make it a little bit bigger.
Yeah, I think talking to you in advance of this, and a little bit about the fair, it was pretty exciting to hear some of your ideas about how this could grow in the future.
Yes.
And I don't want to touch too much on that because that's at least a year away from now.
Exactly. Yes.
Just that that location of Eastern Market does offer a lot of opportunities, and it's great to hear you partnering with local businesses and other people in Eastern Market to really capitalize on that. Mm-hmm. And it's good to hear some of your thoughts about other fairs and how that variety of publishers and artists can kind of gel to form an identity. And I'm wondering about some of your approach to organizing this fair, in both marketing it to try to attract people to apply, artists and publishers to apply to be part of it. And if you can give us any insights into like how you made the selections or who is part of that selection process. For us as people who do fairs regularly, it's also nice to like peek behind the curtain a little bit, if you don't mind demystifying that process a little bit for people.
Sure. So I wish I had a larger set of applicants to tell you, you know, we had to turn down some people. The reality is that we received, so we have 32 people or 32 groups, let's say, exhibited, because they're individuals, and then there are organizations like Pyramid Atlantic who are exhibiting, and a bookstore. So we received, I believe, 36, somewhere just under 40 applications. We accepted all but a couple. There were a couple people who didn't really understand what an art book fair was, so they were trying to sell just artwork. Another person was trying to sell something that was just completely unrelated to art book fairs. And then there were a few people who dropped out for various reasons. So they were accepted, but they couldn't make it this year. They were traveling from, one was traveling from the West Coast, one was traveling from further up in the Northeast, and they were unable to get here. So in terms of demystifying the process, unfortunately, I don't have like a huge sample to offer you to help. Maybe this is a question for 2024 if we get more people who apply.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And I think that's one of the questions too about starting a fair and trying to like build this up for the first time and getting people attracted to it, which is why I think it's also really smart to have it in Eastern Market where there is such foot traffic, because it is like the pre-planning, trying to get people like involved in tabling, and then also the event itself.
Yes.
But that being said, the groups that you do have showing this year, it is a really interesting variety, and there's a lot of people that are coming. It is like DC or DMV heavy, but there are people coming in from New York and Vancouver. Can you talk a little bit about the people that you're really excited about coming in?
So, there are three groups, I think, that are, there's like the local, actually four groups. So there's the local, the DMV people, there's like people coming in from the US, which is pretty much from New York down to Richmond, up and then Pittsburgh, as far west as Pittsburgh. And then there's one exhibitor coming in from Vancouver, British Columbia, and one exhibitor coming in from Querétaro, Mexico. So I'm extremely excited about them because they're offering, like, especially the Ediciones Concordia that's coming up from Querétaro. They do hand-printed publications. And a lot of them are in Spanish, but the artwork is absolutely beautiful. And I'm really excited about them bringing something completely different to DC audiences. Hot and Press is coming from Vancouver, British Columbia. She has stories translated into 16 different languages that she's going to be presenting. So that's really exciting to have. And I believe this is her first time in Washington. So I really hope that she has a wonderful time over here. It's a great time of year. The weather, knock on particle board, will hold up. In terms of, we've got people coming in from the US, so that's the other group. So from New York all the way down to Richmond. We have some interesting people who are coming in from Philly, from Pittsburgh. And in terms of local DMV people that I'm really excited, there's a woman that I've known for a long time. Her name is Carolyn Toy, and she has a book about of her photography. And she's captured DC before everything got redeveloped. So she's got old pictures of the Wonder Bread Factory. She's got old pictures of all these places that were, you know, she and I joke around, it was like the fabulous ruins of DC. You know, it was like, full disclosure, I wrote the introduction to her book. I've been working with her closely, and she was really excited when I told her I was going to be doing this. So I'm really excited to have her here. There's another group that's also from DC, and they're called Wondrous Works, and they have a whole collection of books on African American art. And I think that's going to be really interesting because there is a lot of interest in this city in collecting a lot of local artists. And I think that they are going to be able to introduce audiences to a lot of unknown artists that people have not even heard about. So I'm very excited about them. I'm really excited about Pyramid Atlantic being a part of this as well, because they not only have art books, but books that are artworks. So they kind of play on the whole idea of what is a book, what is art, and which is going to be wonderful. We also have Homo Cats is coming down from Brooklyn, and they seem to be a mainstay at every art book fair. So I feel like by them coming down to be a part of this, that it kind of makes me feel like we're part of the art book fair circuit now. So I'm very happy that they're coming down as well.
I was just saying that Jay Morrison from Homo Cats may very yes. well be staying on this couch right behind me right here during the weekend.
Oh, is that right? Yeah. No. Okay, cool.
We'll see. one thing I did want to say that is that I am very interested also in seeing this fair, the Capital Art Book Fair, mm-hmm. Within a long history of book fairs and zine fests in the DC area. So thinking about this in relationship to the DC Art Book Fair, which was running for a few years in a row, as well as DC Zine Fest, mm-hmm. Which happens every year still. So the Small Press Expo in Bethesda mm-hmm. is a huge mm-hmm. comics festival. Pyramid Atlantic, who you mentioned earlier, had run several art book fairs. And in Baltimore, there was the Prints and Multiples Fair, which happened for several years. So many of these things, except for SPX and DC Zine Fest, have kind of fallen away around COVID and haven't like come back yet. So again, it's exciting to have something that is art book centric happening in the DC area. So I'm really looking forward to this. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, that's true. And I think that this is a funny story. I was in the process of trying to find space to run the DC Art Book Fair, and a friend of mine had texted me. And at the time, anytime I received a text, it was, I had it on audio through my computer. So I received a text from this friend of mine, and we were trying to plan out this date. And he said, oh, I can't make it that date because of the DC Art Book Fair. And I think I was drinking coffee or tea, and I spat it out. I'm like, the what? What do you mean there's a DC Art Book Fair? No, we were trying to plan that. And the three women who organized that, they beat me to it. And I was like, okay, well, they beat me to it, I'm going to join it. So I actually, eCity Art participated in the one they did at Union Market. And we also participated in the one that they did at the National Museum of Women in the Arts. And I actually met a bunch of wonderful people at both events. And I did not want to use the DC Art Book Fair name because they started it. And so I was thinking of different names. So I figured, okay, we're the Capital City, Capital Art Book Fair, why not? And even if they were to do the DC Art Book Fair, I think that we're a large enough region that there is plenty of room for multiple expos to take place throughout the year. I think that, you know, especially if they were to do it in the fall, and we do ours in the spring, it'll give people the opportunity to either do both, or if they can't do one because of timing, they can do the other.
Yeah, and I think, so like Malika and Allison and Elizabeth, who organized the DC Art Book Fair, did such a great job in those fairs. Yep. And for anyone listening here, we do have an interview with Malika and Allison, the two co-founders of the DC Art Book Fair during their first iteration of it. But I do think that DC has such a rich like arts publishing and zine history. Mm-hmm. And there is a, specifically like now, I feel like a strong interest in the book form that I totally agree. This is a good city for multiple fairs. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I think the other thing too, touching on that, I think that in terms of what people are willing to go to and what people, this is a city where people are really interested. There's an intellectual life in the city that I think people from the outside don't really understand. I think people see it with politics, where there are different, there are different political factions that publish, that discuss ideas, you know, for better, for worse. But I also think that this is the city where you have the Library of Congress, where you have, you know, major universities, but there are a lot of writers, there are a lot of people who are very interested in the written format, that are interested in the book format. And I think that art fairs might be, they could probably do well here under certain circumstances, but I really think that an art book fair, once it starts to catch on, that we can really draw in, big crowds. I really think that this region is I think it's really ripe for having art book fairs because of who's here, and what their interests are.
Yeah, and to kind of go off of kind of the arts culture in DC, could you talk a little bit more about East City Art and kind of like what East City Art is and kind of how you started it, maybe?
Sure. So we started it. I literally posted my first post on Blogger on January 4th, 2010. I had a couple of galleries on H Street Northeast before it looked anything like it does today. So this is back in 2008, 2009. And we couldn't get anybody to cover anything that we were doing. We couldn't get the Post to cover anything, City Paper. It's like once you went west of Rock Creek Park, it's like you did not exist. And we started to notice that a lot of our neighbors were having the same kinds of problems. So I said, okay. So we used the term East City to define everything that was in Northeast and Southeast DC, and then the Gateway Arts District in Prince George's County, which is still and has in some ways even become more important since we were covering them in 2010, center of arts production. So initially, the East City Art was a blog, and our main goal was to let people know about the different art events that were taking place in Northeast and Southeast DC in the Gateway Arts District. You have to understand that in 2010 and 2011, that there were 15 art galleries on H Street, that the H Street Festival had a major arts component, that there were a lot of artists working in old carriage houses along H Street, which were then later converted into refrigeration for kegs, for example. So we started that in 2010, and then I went to go work in Anacostia for a little while at Arch, and I helped build the Anacostia Arts Center. I brought in Julia Roby and Adele Roby to start the Anacostia Playhouse. I ran Luminate. And then after a couple of years of working at Arch, I went back to East City Art and really turned it into a full-fledged publication. So our mission was to cover, in 2014 and 2015, was to expand, cover all of DC, and slowly grow that we would cover the entire area. I wanted to grow slowly because a lot of other people tried to start art publications. They expanded too quickly and crashed and burnt. So we slowly built up our coverage area so that by 2015, we were covering the entire DMV. We were also in print. We had a partnership with Capital Community News, which publishes Hillrag, Mid-City, and East of the River. And we were inserted into those publications, as well as we had another 15 or 20,000 that we distributed to, you know, everywhere from places like Capitol Hill Arts Workshop to McLean Project for the Arts to Lorton Workhouse, all over the region. So we started really to do public, you know, so that people knew what was going on. But then we started adding reviews, we started adding interviews and profiles and news briefs. And we do what you would expect of an arts publication, which is, okay, I'm going to go to East City Art and I'm going to find out, okay, there's a new curator at the Hirshhorn. There's a new executive director at Joan Hisaoka Healing Arts Gallery. There's a new grant opportunity for, you know, performance artists. I don't know, some arts organization just received a $35,000 grant. Like we publish these different news briefs. So East City Art's mission is to cover the region through reviews, profiles, news briefs. And then we also have things like calls for entry. So you can go online if you're an artist, and there are a whole bunch of resources available to you. So part of the dovetail with the Art Book Fair was to bring in people locally who publish as well, bring people in from the outside and use East City Art's platform to be able to amplify what we're showing at the Capitol Art Book Fair. I personally really like to run events like this too. So it's wonderful to write and to run the publication, but we used to do a big regional juried show called Emulsion, which was the last few ones were Pepco Edison Place Gallery downtown. It was like in 5,000 or 6,000 square feet. There was lots of artwork, sculptures, there was big prizes. It was televised on WJLA. It was a lot of fun. And I really missed that. But I was like I said, I fell in love with the art book fair format, in part because I'm a publisher, in part because I'm a writer. I do like to draw. I like the zine format. I used to love comics when I was younger, cartoons. Recently I discovered the whole world of Riso, like, which has blown my mind. So much so that I bought a gently used one at a ridiculously good price, and it's in my laundry room. And so all of this, it's one of those things where it's all kind of coming together like a mole or a bouillabaisse or something. It's like a lot of these little ingredients, and I'm just really excited about it. And, you know, the taste test will be on April 1 and 2, but I think that for the longer term, that it's going to be, this is sort of the recipe.
I think Laundry Riso would be a really good name for a small press.
I'm sorry, what was that? What kind of
Riso? I think Laundry Riso can be a really good name for a small press, if you ever want to get that started. Sorry,
go ahead. No, but what I was going to say is kind of being an artist slash administrator slash educator slash just like art, like fan of the region for so long. I've kind of been following East City Art since it started, yeah. And being able to kind of see how not only is it a platform to find information, but it's also a platform for promotion for artists too. Mm-hmm. And so I remember when you guys had the print publication, like you'd be able to find it at random galleries, right? And the way that you're able to kind of expand East City Art to kind of really include the broadness of this region and kind of not just thinking about DC Arts as DC Arts, but like DC Arts is like Fairfax County or Montgomery County and stuff like that. And so I've also been a really big fan about how you've been kind of inviting different writers in the region to actually cover shows. Because I do feel like that's kind of a comment that could be made about the arts in this region. It's like there isn't really that much art coverage, at least in like kind of like the like more like commercial like news medias and stuff like that. And I think that you've been able to kind of fulfill that really nicely.
Thank you. We plan to expand also. We were actually starting to also get into the Frederick area, which, you know, there are all these galleries in Frederick. I was up there, this even before the pandemic, was walking around. One of my good friends from college lives in Urbana, and we were walking around, and I was just floored to walk down Market Street and see all the different galleries over there and everything else. And I get all their press releases and really, you know, good artwork, you know, rigorous schedules that are showing really interesting work. So, we're slowly bringing the writing back up. During the pandemic and when everything was announced in 2020, we just put the brakes on everything. I mean, literally everything. So I have a part-time person, Jess, who was an intern for me, back in 2010. And she still posts everything, all the listings for me. So we, you know, she was on pause. All our writers were on pause. It was, we were just in survival mode at that time. So, and there wasn't really much to cover unless you wanted to cover stuff that was online that people could really see for themselves. So we've been slowly building up the writing program back up again. So there are a couple of new writers that we're going to be bringing online. I'm hoping even a third. After the art book fair, because that's been the big thing. I haven't been able to focus on anything but for the past few weeks, but I'm hoping that you're going to see a lot more reviews, because to your point, Jen, there really isn't a whole lot of writing about art. And I think, first of all, it's very difficult. I feel very comfortable writing, but writing about art is very difficult for many reasons. One of them is you have to know a lot about a lot of different things, especially in this region. In some cases, you have to know about different cultures. You have to know about the materials that people use. You have to know about the subject matter. And sometimes the subject matter is something that, you know, I personally have never studied. So you really have to be a generalist to be able to write about art. And then also, you know, you're trying to describe something that you're seeing. And a lot of people have difficulty doing that. I think it's a difficult exercise. So writing about art is difficult. And You know, I was talking with, I gave a speech up at BlackRock Center for the Arts on Saturday, and there was one of the audience members. She was originally from Russia, and she was telling me how, you know, when she was growing up, you wouldn't have at least a small work of art in your home just so that you could connect with it. It didn't matter if it was valuable or anything. I think that part of the problem is that there really isn't a lot of valuation of art in our society, maybe in American society writ large. But I think that there's some, you know, maybe there's a little bit more in Washington, but an example would be Yayoi Kusama. When she did her retrospective at the Hirshhorn, like in France or in Spain, or I think even in Britain or Mexico, that would be front page news. That should be front page of the Washington Post, right? Like top of the fold, major artist, you know, it certainly would be like in France. It would be like in Le Monde or Le Figaro, would be like front page, right? And I think that that's part of the problem in terms of arts writing and why you don't see as much of it. You know, you see a lot of stuff about finance, right? See a lot of writing about finance, you see a lot of stuff about sports. Not to say that finance or sports or shouldn't be valued, they should be, but it would be nice to see more valuation of fine art or craft or just making in general so that we can have more discussions around it.
Yeah, absolutely. And especially locally, where you have such a wealth of artists working here in DC at in the same place that has these national institutions. Like this, it should be far more known as what's actually happening in places like the Hirshhorn, as well as like smaller galleries here in DC.
Yes. The thing is, I think that the larger institutions are easier to cover because, you know, this an old friend of mine who worked at Eaton, who's really close with me and who worked on East City Art, used to joke around that they're sort of like mausoleums. So everybody's kind of coming to the funeral. You know, there's the Philip Guston show that's going on right now. I mean,
yeah,
there's a lot that's been written about Philip Guston. I mean, you can go to the National Gallery of Art, you can go to the library, you can request to take out volumes, and there are experts, people who've dedicated their lives to studying his work. So there's a script, you know. But if you go to Oda Street Arts Project in Mount Rainier, you know, and you look at like David Mordini's crazy cicadas that he's made like with a 3D printer, who's talked about that? How do you interact with that? It's cool looking, yeah, but what else? You know, is it significant? I think so. So it's a little bit more difficult also, you know, and we're in competition with those large institutions on the Mall for a couple of reasons. Number one, as you mentioned, the coverage. It's easier for the Post to cover. It's the thing to cover. They already have that layer of legitimacy. The other thing too is these institutions are, you know, they're open, free, and open to the public. And a lot of people who go to, to art galleries don't think, oh, I can take one of these works off the Mall and bring it home. Probably what people spend on takeout in 6 weeks. So that's the other thing too to keep in mind in terms of these larger institutions. And I think that it's great that they're here. I think the Hirshhorn and the Phillips have done a lot to try to plug into what's going on over here. The National Gallery of Art, they have a lot of very interesting exhibitions, but I really haven't seen a whole lot of effort on their part to connect with what's happening here in Washington.
Yeah, we had talked about NIMWA, the National Museum of Women in the Arts, for a little bit, but they have such a wonderful library and artist book collection there, and especially the dean and some local dean and teachers and book artists and some of my students even.
Yeah.
But Phil, I'm looking at the time, and I do want to have wind this down a little bit in the first part of the conversation. Whenever we return, it'll be the future and the Capital Art Book Fair. And we are back with Phil Guttenay here with part two of our conversation about the Capital Art Book Fair. Phil, how are you feeling now this is all over?
I am feeling, like I told you earlier, like a slow turtle on quaaludes. I am just crawling this week, but still just really happy and just kind of basking in the afterglow of the whole experience.
Yeah, I'm glad that you can have a celebratory post-fair crash. Mm-hmm. And for our listeners, the fair was on Saturday and Sunday. This is now Thursday. So it's really just a few days in between. And even though we've been referring to it as all over, I'm sure the work actually never ends. You're already starting to work on next year, right?
I already have the hall reserved for April 6th.
Oh, okay, great.
So that the contract is signed and yeah, I'm committed to it. So, yep.
Well, I guess that's that answers my next question, was whether or not you thought that this was a success.
I think it was. We had a wonderful crowd. I think we had the right crowd come through. I was really happy at the quality of the exhibits that were presented at the fair. We had a really excellent group of people. There was just so much diversity, not only in terms of the presenters, but what they were presenting. And it was, I couldn't have asked for a better group to exhibit. The other way that I define the success of the Art Book Fair is that there were a ton of sales. So there's Taewon, goes by Tae with Fakes. He sold out most of his work Saturday. He literally went back home to draw Saturday night, so he'd have things to sell on Sunday. Carolyn Toy, who has done a bunch of these, she said her books sold like hotcakes, to quote her. She has prints of her photographs, which never sell. At this art book fair, she sold a whole bunch, and they're like between 275 to 350 a print. So based on just, you know, a qualitative walkthrough and discussion with people, I think most people did really, really well. A lot of people circled back and said that they want to do this again next year. So that tells me that I think it went pretty well. I think it was a success.
Yeah, I would agree. And I think that it's also nice to have, I'm really happy to hear that people were selling and were very happy with our sales for the weekend. And it was great to see a variety of exhibitors, from grizzled vets like me and Jennifer to some of my students that were there for the first year. Like Tori Sprinkle was there.
Okay.
And that was her, I believe, like first tabling experience at a book fair.
Oh, wonderful. And, I did not know that.
Yeah, yeah. And like she produced really wonderful zines right in our studios here at Mason that she brought out. And I will say that today, in my comics class, I showed a bunch of the zines that I had brought with me from the weekend. And a few of my students also brought zines and books that they picked up over the weekend. So it was a really excited show and tell session today in the studio.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Yeah. So you had some like immediate feedback from tablers, but can you tell us a little bit about your, I'm curious about your mindset during the fair. Like, how are you operating? What were you looking out for? How are you trying to attend to the needs of the exhibitors and measure the crowd?
And measure the wind.
Yeah.
wind, the weather, yes. So, you know, like I said in the first part, as long as the tables and the chairs showed up, everything else was gravy. So my biggest concern was that. So they showed up on time early. We were able to set up the tables in 30 minutes. So that's a lesson learned for next year. My biggest concern was the weather. The skies opened up and just poured during the peak time of exhibitors dropping off work. I had volunteers, so we ran out in the rain and we had extra hands just to move everything in as quickly as possible to make sure that, you know, the paper did not get wet. Everybody prepared pretty well, though. Everybody had everything in like plastic bins. So, and the wind, yeah, as Jen mentioned, there's terrible wind. on Friday, and even through Sunday, where the, you know, coming in. So the North Hall, for people who are listening to the podcast and to get a visual description of it, is on a north, it's on a perfect north-south axis. So the winds were coming in from the west. So there are doors on the north, south, east, and west side. So the western doors kept flapping open, right? Because people were trying to get out that way. And so there was poor Mark Choi from track and field on one side. And then there was Interloop Press from Philly across from the doors, and their stuff was flying. So we ended up having to run around and make sure doors were closed, but that people were still able to access. I ran around also and just made sure that, you know, if anybody needed anything, that we could accommodate them. I interacted a lot with the public as they came through. So people were like, what's this? What's going on? We had programs and, you know, and I had, you know, a few volunteers with me over the weekend just to help out, move the traffic back and forth. So that was the other challenge too, is getting people in through that narrow alley behind North Hall at Eastern Market, parked, unloaded, and then get everybody reloaded into their vehicles and out of there before 5 o'clock. So that all worked out quite well logistically, I thought. I mean, you tell me what you think, because you were on the other end of that.
Yeah, I mean, luckily, because we were doing the conversation in the morning, we were set up to be the first people there. So I feel like in terms of load in, we had the benefit of just like showing up immediately, throwing stuff onto the tables. Then we were out the door to get set up at the other space for the talk.
I did have a questionable puddle though that I had to kind of like hurdle over. And I was like, there's a puddle and it looks like I don't know what's in this water, but I'm just going to like leap and hope for the best, like close my eyes.
Yeah, I forgot that you had soggy feet for the entirety of Saturday.
It's almost as worse as moist feet. Like, I don't even know.
Yeah. yeah, I think, you know, in terms of load in and load out, all that from an exhibitor standpoint went fairly smoothly.
Yeah, I was going to encourage people just to cart in their works if they could, just because it's so much easier that way. But I completely understand. Some people had like there was Wondrous Works, and then they had some partners also who were there who literally had like crates of hardcover books. And then my dead aunt's books from Hyattsville was there, and they literally had those little library carts.
Yeah.
So, and they had like a minivan, like this little delivery van filled with those. So yeah, of course that's not, you know, you can't just put it in like a radial flyer and cart it in, you know, on wheels. So I got that. So.
Also say that one thing that I was anticipating that ended up not being a problem is that because it was the first Capital Art Book Fair and so many people are familiar with Eastern Market as like the market, like getting groceries, food, or like little like knickknacks and soap and bread and things from outside. I've been to several first fairs where you almost have to train the audience for the first year to get them to understand that these are books and prints that you can't in fact like touch and buy, and are not just something from Barnes and Nobles or something. And I did not have that same experience with this. I felt like people were coming in and were interested in either immediately knowledgeable or faking it. Like there was no, like, I didn't see people really come in questioning what they were doing there or why we were there.
Well, I also think part of that nice. Too is because, sorry.
No, please go ahead.
Well, I mean, I don't know. It's because basically like there's like the smaller like food market Saturday, then Sunday was like a very expansive market, right? Like Eastern Market took over like 2 blocks and so on. I feel like the diversity within Eastern Market and those vendors, I was able to kind of like take a little lunch break and like walk around outside when it wasn't like too windy, but there was a very wide range of kind of like different craftsmen and stuff like that and so on. And I don't know, Phil, you could probably speak on this, but kind of like the function of the North Hall and Eastern Market, because it isn't a part of the actual market, which is the South Hall, right? And so on.
Okay, so this is, let me just break that down. So April 1st, which was Saturday, was supposed to be the opening day for the outdoor markets, but because of the weather, it was canceled. So the diversity, all those vendors that you said, so there are two groups, I think, that there's a flea market and then there's another group for vendors, but they occupy all of 7th Street, which is shut down from Pennsylvania to North Carolina Avenues. So like you said, there are a lot of craftspeople, there are artists that sell different paintings, there's a whole variety of things over there. Those streets, so the people who run those two markets, even though from an audience perspective, they're indistinguishable, but they have two territories on 7th and then down, I think that's C Street, the cross street, or D Street. So there are two territories. The market itself is owned by the District of Columbia. It's owned by DGS, District Government Services. And there's a market manager. So the food stalls that are on the south side of Eastern Market are permanent. So they're always there. So you know, butcher, greengrocer. North Hall is a public space that you can rent. So it's an event space, so to speak. However, if the space is not utilized during the weekend, so had we not rented it on Saturday, I believe that all the vendors who were outside, or many of them, would have been in North Hall on Saturday, if that makes sense. So it's let's call it a flex space, a rental flex space for the most part. And I think that part of the reason the audience didn't need training is twofold. Firstly, I think people go to Eastern Market looking for prints, for not only artisanal, artisan made objects like leather work, or but also like artwork, like paintings and prints, that sort of thing. When they came into those people are when they came into the market, they were like, "What's this? This is new. This isn't the same ceramics person or leather person." And what we were exhibiting was at a much higher level, in my personal opinion, than a lot of the things that you see out in the market for the most part. Secondly, we did a ton of PR and publicity. So first of all, East City Art, we have a massive outreach. So a lot of the people who came because they saw stuff on East City Art, they saw links to different vendors and were like, "I want to go see that specific exhibitor because I saw it on East City Art." Secondly, we did a lot of public relations outreach, not only with media, but also within the neighborhood. So through like the Capitol Hill Bid, through Capitol Hill Arts Workshop, who they all have like these massive lists. And then thirdly, we also did a big outreach through the press. So we were highlighted in Washington Post's Going Out Guide. We were highlighted in City Paper. We did the TV interview on Fox Morning News. So we did a lot of outreach. So I think that we were able to attract some of the people who just kind of stumbled upon this, but also people who saw this through different media channels.
And I'm curious about like, so I had a great success to bring people in. With this being the first year, do you feel like you were able to kind of show what this fair could be to the community and to the neighborhood? Because I know you were also working with a bunch of like neighborhood partners. And I'm thinking about if you're already starting to identify either people to partner with for next year or ways that the fair can actually grow to like a second stage or to become like more of what you've been envisioning for it to be.
Yeah, so I think that for next year, I'm already talking to like the different cultural partners. One of the goals of this was to be able to have a marquee or signature cultural event on Capitol Hill in the spring, because a lot of the galleries have closed down. There are a bunch of galleries, art studio spaces, and with, you know, it's the same story everywhere. Rents increase, artists get pushed out. Galleries get pushed out. We know the story. So my intention was to have a spring cultural event on Capitol Hill. And then there's a fall one, Pottery on the Hill, which is ceramics, but they have, it's an art fair expo style event at Hill Center. And they have potters about 15 to 20 potters from all over the country that come to this. So, and it's carefully curated and everything else. So my goal was to work with the different neighborhood associations and groups to make sure that we can bring people to Capitol Hill and let people know that it's a still a cultural center, that it's not, you know, that there's, you know, Capitol Hill Arts Workshop and Hill Center. A bunch of the galleries have closed, but that we're still able to, that we still have a cultural presence in the region.
Great, yeah. And I'm really looking forward to seeing how you do grow this and how you do partner with more people and to like highlight that as a creative neighborhood. And as we were kind of wrapping up on the second day, you did mention that it seems like you could really grow the fair itself by several vendors as well.
Indeed, indeed. So my understanding is that we have a lot of leeway in terms of how we space out the tables. So because there are four exits and there are windows everywhere. So if there's a fire, like, you know, you can get out of there pretty quickly. That's sort of the fire marshal's perspective of things. From a logistic perspective and from putting myself in the shoes of the vendors, you don't want to have these narrow 6-foot, you want to have like a good amount of space between the tables so people can stop and chat and move through. Because if people are like, you know, squeezed like sardines and can't move through and can't talk to the exhibitors, people are not going to want to stop and buy things or chat. So I can definitely increase. We had like 30, a couple people dropped out for at the last minute for personal reasons. But we had, I think, roughly 34 tables, two of which I used at the entrance. So we could probably increase it by 8 comfortably. So that means without really changing the flow of traffic through there, we might be able to increase it to 50. I've been playing around with it a little bit, but we'll see. We'll see. My concern is that we're going to get a lot of people. We're in this wait and see mode, and I heard from a lot of people that they want to apply next year. So my goal is how do we accommodate everybody who's qualified to show, and then do we keep showing the same people year after year? Like I know, for example, Printed Matter, in their application, I think for this year for LA, they're like, okay, if you've shown before, you can apply, but we're going to give priority to people who haven't shown before. So those are some of the problems that you don't have your first year that I'm going to have to sort through.
Yeah, and I'll be curious to talk to you more about that next year as you start to really grasp what the identity of the Capitol Art Book Fair can be going forward. I mean, there's certainly like good arguments to have like regular exhibitors, mm-hmm. and also to keep things like fresh and mm-hmm. kind of mixed up.
Yeah.
And along those lines, like there was a very big like local presence, mm-hmm. in Virginia, Washington D.C., Maryland, Philadelphia. But there were several exhibitors that I had not seen I did not know about, mm-hmm. That are local artists and publishers working that I was really excited about. And I'm sure that Jennifer, some people that you saw was your first exposure to them as well. So this is more of a question for you and Jennifer. I'm sorry, I'm putting you on the spot. Was there anyone that you were really excited to be exposed to or to see here at the fair? Or who's like new to you? Yeah, yeah. Talking to you.
So just like before I answer that question, the other thing that I thought was really interesting, kind of being somebody who does a lot of like arts administration in the region, I recognize people from my like other life of a coordinator from like, oh, you are also an artist from my festival that I do in the fall, and we're tabling next to each other. Hi, like I make art too, but I also have like people like recognize me from like the early 2000s. I was like, whoa, like I have a haircut.
Worlds collide.
Yeah, so I was like, so that being said, the person who recognized it, the girls on film, like they were just like really great people to talk to. I really loved their work. And also Interloop Press, who was across from us, I was like drawn to just kind of like their printing spot, like their printing style, and also just kind of like the subject matter within the zines. And like, I didn't catch the person's name, but the little brother sister duo, they were like awesome. But yeah, and then it was also nice to kind of see like Pyramid and like some of the books that they're making, and then Lavender Lizard Press, who we had met in New Jersey, who's a part of the Donut Club. Yeah. It was nice to catch up with Eliza, and then kind of how, because Eliza's also affiliated with Pyramid too, and so how kind of like all these like random Pyramid people started popping up out of the woodworks, and kind of just like being able to catch up with people, because I mean, I love Pyramid, but it's also in Hyattsville, you know what I mean? But
yeah.
Then also, I don't know who else. I feel like I was able, something that I enjoyed about this fair was kind of being able to actually have the physical space to be comfortable to walk around to tables.
Totally.
And that it wasn't too crowded. And then even when kind of the crowds did start picking up during those like patches, people were still able to maneuver around them. You know what I mean? Like, you didn't feel trapped behind your table. You didn't feel like trapped at somebody else's table. And so that's something that I thought was like really successful about this event. And then also catching up with like Late Comeback Press, which was in the episode, is going to be in the episode. And then Kate and Sam, I don't remember what their collective was called, Christopher.
Like Mirrors of Society Quartet, I think, was what their collaborative or collective name was for the fair.
Yeah, then like I was like really excited about the conversation we had with them over at Chaw.
Yeah, absolutely.
Even though like the walk over to Chaw from Eastern Market was just kind of like I'm holding the mics and like trying not to be like drenched in rain because it was during one of those like brain spurts. But yeah, so like overall, like yeah, it was like a really good time. I had a lot of fun.
Yeah, me too. And I did really appreciate how it became, because of the local focus, like this immediate local gathering of people. Like it felt very immediate community based, right?
Yeah.
And some of the presses that you mentioned, Jennifer, were some of the people that I was most excited to meet for the first time, like Interloop Press and Girls on Film. And again, I spent two of my classes today like showing those zines off specifically. I thought the Girls on Film concept, like having women write about film in the 80s, is such a wonderful topic for a zine, and that they're putting it out regularly. And Interloop, their reso printing based in Philadelphia, and their design work for it was both super eye-catching and incredibly interesting, because they did have zines that were like toxic waste dumps across the US.
Pretty heavy. Which is like, pretty heavy.
Yeah, yeah. Some really like horrifying information, but designed in these like really amazing packages, and then a lot like lighter fare too in their publications. And it was the first time they got to really talk to Mark Choi at a fair from Track and Field. And I had been in communication with him previously, so I was really happy to see his work. So yeah, very excited to be seeing people for the first time in my area. So this has inevitably spawned what will be like more episodes of Paper Cuts as I reach out to these people to try to get interviews. So thanks for that, Phil.
Oh, quite welcome. I'm really happy to hear all these things. I mean, part of the goal of this also is just to connect people. I mean, that's something that I see East City Art's role is connecting people. And, you know, obviously we do it with our digital assets, but, you know, being able to do that in person is there's no comparison.
So I guess I've got a couple questions left for you before we let you go, so you can take a nap and continue to sleep off the fair. One is like, how are you going to be documenting this? Like, is there a way where you can hold on to some of this information to let people know what did happen? Mm-hmm. And second is like a more broad question. If there is one thing that you're already excited about adding to the fair or changing about it, what is that?
So in terms of documenting it, we're planning everything that's on the website currently is going to be archived, but not archived in such a way that it's not findable. We want to basically take all the information and just have it listed. So when you click on 2023 Capital Book Fair, you have all the information. I was thinking about adding some more information about the fair, like maybe some photos and then maybe a few other things. So I think that that's probably, that's one of the things that I was thinking about doing. I was thinking about also publishing just some images on East City Art with just all the photos. People love just scrolling through photos of events in case they missed it. That's what I was thinking about doing. I have written down a whole bunch of different things. So like my lessons learned, et cetera. In terms of what I'm really excited about next year, you know, I haven't gotten that far yet. I have the dates and everything else. What I'm thinking about, I'm really excited that they're going to be, that we're going to have, I think, even more vendors, exhibitors present, because it's going to provide an opportunity for even more networking. And there might be even more people coming out of the woodwork that, you know, that you didn't know about, that, you know, people who are here. And I also hope to be able to do more printing myself. So get East City Art back in printed format. So I'm hoping to maybe be able to give away like our East City Art, you know, quarterly publication, like we were doing back in 2019, before the pandemic. And then the other thing that I was thinking about doing too is if there are individual artists or publishers who don't want to have a whole table for whatever reason, either it's cost or time, to maybe say, hey, you know, we're going to have an East City Art table. Would you like us to, you know, sell your work or exhibit it, whatever? I don't know what any of that looks like right now, but these are just some ideas that I'm kicking around.
That's great. I do love the idea of having like an East City Art like featured table to highlight more people who might only have a small number of publications or can't make it, or tabling fees are prohibitive, or anything along those lines. I think that's a really smart idea.
Yeah, because Chaz was doing that with the print party. So he was basically like a small distributor.
Yeah. And
so the books that he had were, he represented other publishers who couldn't, you know, so, and I'd be interested in talking to him. I didn't get a chance to, about what his structure and business model looked like.
Yeah. Yeah. Chaz is, again, someone that I'm really looking forward to talking to more. Jennifer and I met him for the first time at the Jersey Art Book Fair not too long ago. So it's great to have another Pittsburgher in town, another Yinzer. Cool. Jennifer, do you have any final questions for Phil?
No, I don't think so. I just want to kind of reiterate again, like, I really did appreciate this opportunity for publishers in our region. And I was also like, really, I mean, like, I was really happy with the experience overall. And so I felt like the publishers were supported. They also, like, we had like a great turnout, and also kind of like the way you're able to work about, like, work with the space and kind of the layout of the fair, I think was really successful. So thank you.
Oh, my pleasure. I'm so happy that it really warms my heart to know that so many people had such a good experience. So I really wanted to make sure that, you know, that was the case.
Yeah, congrats, Phil. This has been something you've wanted to do for a long time. I'm glad that it finally came together and was such a success.
Yeah, no, it's wonderful to see so many years of community. Easter, 2023, March 31st, Sunday morning. So we're doing it. Excellent.